am a lawyer, but I am not necessarily your lawyer. The materials discussed in this podcast are for informational purposes only and should not be deemed legal advice. If you have a specific legal question according to your circumstances, then I encourage you to speak with an attorney licensed in your jurisdiction.
Welcome to the Ag Law Today podcast, where we educate you on all aspects of agriculture law, including business, farm estate planning, administration, regulatory, property, and family law that impact your life and business. Now, here's your host, Carrie Rinker with Rinker Law.
Welcome back to another edition of Ag Law Today. We've got Brianna Schroeder back in the house all the way from Indiana. Brianna, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners, tell us who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah, thank you. My name's Brianna. I am an attorney based here in Indianapolis, Indiana. I grew up in the northeastern corner of the state on a little family farm with a bunch of brothers. And after undergrad up in Wisconsin and law school in Indiana, I've made my way back down to Indianapolis, where I am practicing law and representing ag producers, livestock, crop growers, specialty crops, ag businesses, and lots of different areas of law.
So I know that you said that you grew up on a farm and then you ended up being an attorney. So I'm curious, Brianna, what inspired you to go to law school?
Well, if you asked my brothers, they would just say that I like to fight and talk. Right. I think the more accurate answer is I like to read and write. And when it boils down to it, I mean, that's a really big part of my job. I really enjoyed school. Nobody ever says that, but I like school a lot. And I like reading. And this is a profession where I was able to combine my love of reading, writing, and talking with my love of all things farming. So it's kind of a perfect fit.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I feel like television and movies have like screwed up the image of what lawyers do. And it wasn't until like right before I went to law school and I was thinking about law school, like a lot of people kept on telling me like, you have to like to read a lot in order to go to law school. You know, I mean, you're going to have to read several hours every single night. And a lot of what lawyers do is read and write.
Absolutely. We're doing the online, the virtual thing here. But if you were sitting in my desk or in my office, you'd see that my desk is covered with papers and books and things that I just need to read. And it's not quite law and order. Not as glamorous.
No. But you definitely have to have a thirst for knowledge and to want to think through issues, you know, to be a good lawyer.
Yep. I think solving problems. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. And you got to hear all the information, figure it out, and then say, okay, here are some different potential ways we could get this figured out. And a lot of times that involves reading case law and statutes and old crusty letters and whatever else you can dig up.
So today we're talking about all things fence law. And Brianna, I had a very small stint in Wyoming, and I also lived very briefly in Montana. And that was the first time in my life where I feel like fence law really came to life, because as a Midwestern girl, I just never really thought about it this much. So give me an overview. What's fence law?
Yeah, so I think the history is kind of cool here. So way back when the United States became a country, places had basically two different systems, either the idea of fencing in or fencing out. Fencing in meaning if you've got livestock, it's your responsibility to fence them in. But then in territories and states that were less populated, it was the idea of fencing out. So if you don't want livestock coming through your property, you got to build a fence to keep them out, because anything that's not fenced in, we're going to assume that the livestock can eat grass and roam around there. So that's kind of the background. But a lot of states still have fence laws. A lot of Midwestern states out in the West have fence laws that essentially what it boils down to is properties that are outside of city limits in agricultural areas. there are these laws set up so that property owners that are adjacent to each other have to share the burden in constructing any fences between them.
Whenever I lived out in Wyoming and in Montana as a Midwestern cattle girl, mm-hmm. I was freaked out because for the first time I saw a cattle guard when I went onto the interstate. And I think that that was part of the reason why, you know, because of the law. So what's the general idea of partition fence law?
So here in Indiana, and I can tell you that Nebraska, Iowa, Ohio, Minnesota, a lot of different states have a very similar scheme. The idea basically is that if you and I are neighbors in a place outside of city limits and one of us wants a fence, we don't both have to want the fence. As long as one of our properties is used for ag, and think about how broad that can be, crops, conservation, livestock. But as long as one of our properties is used for ag and one of us wants a fence on the property line between our properties, usually the rule is that if we stand and look at each other over the where the fence is going to go, I build my right-hand side and you build your right-hand side, so they'll meet in the middle. And that, you know, that can become kind of controversial if you really want a fence and I'm your neighbor and I say, Carrie, I don't want a fence. I hate fences. Essentially, under the law, you can force me to build half of the fence and pay for it, a fence that I don't even want.
And fences are expensive. I'm a goat farmer and I need to get some fences. And this is not like a $500 event. This is thousands of dollars.
Right. And most statutes have a requirement in there about how strong and tight the fence has to be. And there's some really old language that it's got to be cattle strong, bull tight, whatever that is. But generally, it's got to be able to turn livestock. It's got to be able to turn cattle and horses and goats and other types of livestock that would be fenced in. So yeah. This is not like a, you know, gentle white picket fence either.
No. So what's, I mean, do you think that that's fair though to force a neighbor adjacent to an agriculture producer to pay for part of a fence?
Well, that is a really good question. And a lot of these states legislatures are looking at that exact question because most of the fence law that's on the books dates from late 1800s, early 1900s. I've had cases here in Indiana where we end up citing to cases all the way back to the early 1800s because those are, as the courts say, it's old wine, but it's good wine. Mm-hmm. Those cases are still good. And, you know, that maybe made a lot more sense 150, 200 years ago. You know, now as we've got some suburban sprawl out into the residential or the rural areas, there's more rural residential. You know, I think that's a really good question. And, you know, from my understanding of the topic here in the Midwest, people are very split on that issue.
Yeah. So how does this work in practice? I mean, what does that look like really when you're forcing the neighbor to pay for, you know, half of a fence?
Well, it's very tense sometimes, but generally the procedure goes something like this. If we take the example again, where you and I are neighbors and I want the fence and you don't. Mm-hmm. I build my half of the fence, my right-hand half of the fence, and then I send you written notice. Carrie, under the fence law, you got to build your half of the fence. You get a set amount of time to do so. In some states, it's 30 days, 20 days. And then if that time runs up and you haven't built your part of the fence yet, we can go to the township trustee and I can say to the trustee, look, Carrie won't build her part of the fence under the fence law. She's got to. The township trustee can send you a notice saying, come on, Carrie, build the fence. And then if you still refuse to do it, the trustee can take it upon themselves to build that fence and then charge it back to you through the county auditor's office. And so, as you can imagine, what do they say? Good fences make good neighbors. Sometimes it takes a lot to get to that fence, and it can endanger that neighborly relationship in the process.
You bring up a great point, and that's actually where my brain was going right there because, you know, listen, over the weekend, I was getting text messages about a neighbor dispute with a farmer. And these things are real. And I guess from your perspective, is it worth it to burn that bridge with your neighbor?
Well, there are a lot of people out there, and I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you don't know here, but a lot of people out there that would say, well, it's the principle of the thing. They are supposed to pay for this fence. They got to pay for their half. I know they don't want it. I know they don't like it, but too bad. That's the law. And that is correct under the black letter law that there is a requirement to that. But I think that if it were me in that situation, I would be looking at, how much fence are we talking about? How much would that cost? And I always tell people, it's not a bad idea before you storm in with a written letter that you send them via certified mail, walk over there and knock on their door and say, hey, here's the thing. You know, my wife and I are going to get goats and we really need a fence. And I know you guys don't have animals, but I do think it'd be helpful for both of us to have this fence. Do you think we could come up with some kind of agreement and try that route first? And if that doesn't work, you do have the law to back you up and there's a process and a procedure to follow, but you know, an extra couple of hours on your time might be well worth it in the long run.
Totally agree with you. I love that approach and just going to have a conversation with them, just neighbor to neighbor, person to person, because you want to know what? Goats get out. Right? Like right. Literally my goats have gone out and they've gone on my neighbor's property and I'm getting a text message. And I just feel like sometimes people need to work together. And I feel like folks in the agriculture community need to have those good relationships with the people from the other side. And that doesn't mean that you have to forego your rights, but you could do it in a way that's less adversarial.
Yeah. And I tell people, hey, if it means things take a week longer, you know, at least you try. At least you try, because that means if you knock on their door, you have the conversation. Nowadays, you have it maybe outdoors, but you have that conversation with them. Maybe they come to an agreement with you. Maybe they don't. But then at least you've tried. You haven't given up or waived any of your legal rights. And I think it can go a long way toward maintaining rural neighbor relationships. So it's a tough issue, though.
So, Brianna, let's say one of our listeners or many of our listeners have questions. Does this law exist in my state? Or what are the fence laws that are applicable in my state? I know some states have regulations on like the height of the fence and other types of, you know, fence regulations, not just where to find an attorney, but what's your advice on questions that they could ask in a consultation just to make sure that attorney really understands production agriculture?
I think that's a fabulous question. And I think it's one that we as attorneys maybe need to think more about sometimes. But I would tell somebody looking for a lawyer to help them with maybe a fence law or any ag law question. The first things I would want to know as a potential client are, you know, what's your experience with other ag entities? Have you represented goat farmers before? Do you have any experience with county zoning or whatever that the topic is? Have you ever negotiated a solar lease before? Or is this your first time? The other thing that I think is really important as attorneys and as potential clients is I want to know in black and white, how is this relationship going to work? So I think, you know, what's your engagement letter look like? Do you have a fee structure? What's the deal? Are my documents going to be stored in a paper dusty file in the corner? That's fine, as long as I know that. Or is it going to be stored on the cloud somewhere? Again, fine, as long as I know that. So I think questions both about the substance of your problem and maybe it's a little bit less sexy, a little more boring, procedural day-to-day. How does your law firm work?
Right. No, I think that those are great questions. And to be honest with you, Brianna, I don't think I've ever, and I've been doing this for 12 years on my own, and I've never had a client in a consultation ask me any of those questions. They've never asked me how I store documents. They've never asked me, how does it really work to work for you? How easy is it to get an appointment here? And all of those different procedural things that I think are just as important than the fact that I grew up on a farm, you know, and I understand what a Schedule F is. So,
right, right.
Yeah.
I think both. I mean, I think it's like you need, it's not one or the other. You got to have both, because I think at the same time, you can have the fanciest document storage system or the slickest app in the world. But if I say crop insurance and you say, huh, you know, what's that? Well, that probably still isn't the right fit. And the one thing I will say about ag lawyers, I think in general, we're pretty, it's a pretty, even nationwide, a relatively tight-knit community, in that if you go to one person and they can't help you, I think they're usually pretty good at saying, I understand your problem, Carrie, but I don't think I'm your attorney. Let me have, you've got to call my friend Jenny. Here's her contact information. She'll help you out.
Yeah, I think that's the challenging thing about agriculture law, is that it's an industry-based practice as opposed to a practice area-based practice. So, you know, an attorney like me, I don't touch farm bankruptcy at all. So I think it's prudent to get people in the right hands. So to close, Brianna, how can folks find you online?
Sure. Our website is www.aglaw.us. My email is schroeder@aglaw.us. I'm on Twitter at Schroeder. And I think all of that contact information can be found on our website. And if you don't want to use the computer, you can still dial me up the old way at 317-855-9920. Be happy to answer any questions or just have follow-up conversations if anyone's interested.
Excellent. Brianna, thanks so much for your time and your expertise.
Thank you for listening to the Ag Law Today podcast. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe to the show so you never miss out on new episodes. Share it with your friends and leave a review. We would be so grateful. Check out all the latest episodes on our website at www.aglawtodaypodcast.com. Connect with Carrie on Twitter and LinkedIn with the handles Carrie Rinker and Rinker Law. Follow Ag Law Today on Facebook and on Instagram. A special shout out to the Purdue University Extension Education Department for their support and collaboration on this podcast. See you next time.